Like a chrysalis, we're emerging from the economy of the Industrial Revolution. An economy confined to and limited by the Earth's physical resources into the economy in mind, in which there are no bounds on human imagination, and the freedom to create is the most precious natural resource.
Welcome to The Soul of Enterprise, Business in the Knowledge Economy, sponsored by Sage, transforming the way people think and work, enabling their organizations to thrive. I'm Ed Kless with my friend and co-host Ron Baker, and folks, on today's show, The Heart of a Cheetah, our second interview with Magat Wadd. Ron, how you doing?
Great. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this.
Yes, absolutely. We had Magat on back at, what was it? What show number was it, Ron, just to get it out there?
It was episode 160, and it was in September 2017. So it was pre-COVID, Magat.
Pre-COVID. Wow. Well, let's read her on and jump right to the interview. Magat Wadd is the cheetah entrepreneur who believes that free markets and economic freedom are the pathway for Africa to leapfrog ahead, with Africans taking the leading role in co-creation of the 21st century prosperity for all, innovation, culture, and technology. Her book, Heart of a Cheetah, How We Have Been Lied to About African Poverty and What It Means for Human Flourishing, is the story of her life intertwined with the aforementioned message and is this major subject of our conversation today. Welcome back to The Soul of Enterprise, Magat Wadd.
Thank you so much for having me on, Ed and Ron. It's a pleasure to be back with you guys.
Well, first off, we like to ask this of every author who's on. It's Jonah Goldberg's favorite question when he's on a book tour. What's your book about?
I guess you read it. My book is about how Africa got to where it is today. How did we get to this day, 2024, still being the poorest region in the world? Really getting the proper diagnosis as to why that is the case, how we got there, and most importantly, how do we get ahead from here?
It's a fantastic story, and like I said, it really intertwines your story with what your thoughts are on what should happen. But let's back up a little bit, and I'll ask you some basic questions about it. What is a cheetah entrepreneur?
Oh, a cheetah entrepreneur. So cheetahs, just to take people back, the word cheetah basically is an inspiration from Ghanaian economist George Ayite. So George Ayite, back in 2007, TED had its first TED Global, and it was in Africa. So back then, I, along with 99 other young Africans, we were the first cohort of TED Fellows. It started with us as the African cohort. So 100 young Africans from around the world that TED felt would be the ones leading the way for the Africa of today. So I was one of them. And there, George Ayite gave this amazing talk called Cheetah versus Hippos, or Hippos versus Cheetah, one of those on TED. And it was just fascinating. There I was, this young entrepreneur just getting started in life, and hearing this man who looked like me on stage, and he was talking of something that I haven't heard others talk about. It was not just him. It was him and Rumwenda, many other Black Africans right there who were pushing back on the concept of aid. And they were promoting the concept of trade and really making me and others realize that we basically saying that up till now, you have this class of people, which he called the hippos who were stuck, you know, in the old ways, the hippos who were benefiting from the status quo, you know, aid and bad governance, all of that stuff. And then he said that they're the ones who have kept Africa where it is today, and that the cheetahs, us, were who he relied on. And it was not so much about your age, but it was more about a mindset. So the cheetahs are those of us who are not waiting on anybody. We are not sitting around and complaining. It's just not that. It's like a can-do attitude, wait for nobody, get it done by yourself, and just keep running. And so that's what a cheetah entrepreneur is. It's those of us Africans who believe that, yes, we can, regardless and despite any, you know, obstacles. And it's really up to us, and we're not going to wait for anybody, especially not for government, to correct this. Foreign aid is not our what we wait for either. So that's what a cheetah entrepreneur is. It is mostly in your mindset.
And talk a little bit about more George Ayathi. I know he wrote the foreword to your book, but I was looking him more about him up, and I see that he passed away in 2022. So he was able to write this foreword shortly before he passed then, I suppose.
Yeah. No, I was just very blessed that George was able to do that. So George was this Ghanaian economist, like I said. And the reason why for me he's so important, and he's critically important to the future of Africa. Why? Because George looked into something, he looked in a direction at a time when it was not a popular thing to look in such a direction. George is somebody who basically went against the Marxist socialist grains of his time, right? So he's the one who looked around and he said, this makes no sense. Because you have to understand, more than any of us, you know, because of his age, he grew up in times when, you know, Marxist socialist ideology was very much en vogue, was very much accepted, you know, reasoning. Any respectable intellectual was actually a Marxist socialist, right? And so George grew up in an environment like that, and he looked around and he noticed that basically most African nations were actually ran by socialists according to socialist, laws and regulations. And for him, and when I asked him, I said, George, but given that you were in such an environment where Marxist socialism was the accepted, you know, intellectual, you know, reasoning, and everywhere you turn, it just is what surrounds you. Why and what got you to look the other direction? In this case, the direction of free markets. He said, my God, it's because it made no sense to me. Because when I look at my mother, I look at the women before her, knowing that side of our history, and also the history of Africans before colonialism, he's like, there was nothing there that was socialist. Nothing. He said, markets. There were markets everywhere. And it's true. To this day, we have markets everywhere in Africa. And he would say that no one would ever dare to tell a woman how much margin she can make from the bread she's selling at the market or anything that she's selling at the market, the milk, the goat, whatever. And so, and he said, even the chief, we had chiefs, but if you were not happy with your chief, you can leave. You can go start another one, or you can go join another one, right? And that power of exit, because really that's what it is. To be free is to have a power of exit. And for exit to be valid, it has to be something that's achievable. You know, it shouldn't take you too much money and or too much time in order for you to be able to exit. It should be as easy as just lifting one foot over another and making one step or two or three or five, and you're done. And in this case, yeah, this attitude that, this idea that you have to wait every 4, 5, 6 years in order to choose the chief. No, you choose every single moment of your life if you're fine with this chief or not. And so when you put it all together, he's just like, it just made no sense. What I was experiencing, what I was seeing people do and say, and what I knew our history to be just did not match. And so that's why, and so he kind of pursued that research, and that's how he got to writing books like Africa Unchained, where he's explaining, George actually is the one who really gave me the last piece of my puzzle, because when I went to understand that Africa is the poorest region in the world today because it is still the most overregulated region in the world, my next question was, how did we get here? What happened? And then George's work was there to tell me exactly what happened, because what he had noticed the same thing. He was like, how did we get here? Because this doesn't match who I know us to be prior to colonialism. So when he started to look into it, then George started to look at to see very important things. Basically, right around the times when most African nations that were colonized were starting to become decolonized, meaning getting their independences. This was the late 50s, early 60s. What you had is you had a few circumstances in place. One had to do with the fact that, again, any respectable, you know, intellectual back then was more or less a Marxist socialist, right? And on top of that, we had all the lies coming out of the Soviet Union telling us about how supposedly that statism system was working, and contrasting it with supposedly how capitalism has gotten us in trouble all over the place in the Western world. And at the same time, it was a, you have to remember that it was a Marxist. The Marxists have been traditionally, at least up till that point, the ones who have been really fighting for equal, for racial equality, right? This is something we have to give them, however much we dislike them. I mean, Marx is a notorious racist himself. That's a whole other conversation. But, you know, the Marxists were fighting for racial equality. And when you add to that the mental mindset that my forefathers then were in at that point, you know, look, you know, you are still in colonialism, about to get out of it. But, and then you have these two blocks fighting each other. On one end, the West, you know, fighting for, you know, representing freedom and practicing capitalism as their economic system, facing off with the Eastern bloc, you know, representing various forms of statism, you know, and basically looking for influence. They're looking for influence down south. And at that point, again, put yourself in our mental state. Here we are. We've been colonized, and we've been colonized by the West. And so my our African liberators were probably thinking, look, you, the West, is who, you know, colonized us. So whatever it is that you're going for, we're certainly not going to be for. So that's how, at a very critical juncture of our history, this was a very important time of our history, you know, we sided with Marxist socialist ideologies that we never, to this day, have reconsidered. And it was just not just like, you know, oh yeah, we agree with the Marxist socialists. No, we also adhere to policies that basically manifest those beliefs. And so this is how tragically most formerly colonized African nations, as they were getting their independences, started out newly elected presidents who were for the most part socialist. And even those of them who supposedly were not socialist, like the Nigerians, still were running 5-year plans very much a la Soviet style. So even them, you know, there is always a spectrum for everything. So they say we were capitalists, but they're capitalists almost at the border with socialism, right? So really not the threshold that we needed. So that's kind of what happened. And for me, George's work has been crucial. And of course, since then, others have, you know, been doing more work, and we have more new scholars who are keeping on looking in the historical side of us and going back to pre-colonial times. Because I think for many people, the history of Africa starts with slavery, moves on to colonialism and to present day. But I think very few people, including Africans themselves, have an understanding of who we were, what we were doing. Because if you look there, you realize that we had really, we were very much free marketeers, free enterprise people. We had very sophisticated trade routes. We had very, you know, powerful empires in line with some of the Chinese empires back in their times and everything. I mean, these were, you had some very advanced societies, and having the free enterprise to justify that, you know, to justify the thriving of those societies. Was everything perfect? Of course not. But I think it's very, so that is what, that's who George Ayite is, and that's a contribution he has made. And so personally, for someone like me, he really gave me a decomplexed attitude towards embracing. He gave me a decomplexed attitude towards embracing free market capitalism, because I can with a straight face tell you that free market capitalism is my birthright. It's not something that white people do or whatever. It's my birthright. And it's just not knowing my history to reject it, because if I know my history, I will know that's what my forefathers were practicing. And it happened to be that it's actually, by now, it's proven that it's one of the best, you know, systems we can all use to build posterity and human flourishing. And so my ancestors had it right. Thank you very much. that's pretty much where I'm at.
No, that's excellent. And as you point out in the book, it's probably inspired through George, you know, as European colonialism was replaced by European socialism, it was still European.
That's right. Exactly.
You know, and as Ronald Reagan was asked when he asked about socialism, he says, well, it doesn't work. That's right. So, well, we are up against our first break. Want to remind our listeners that they can get a hold of Ron or me by sending an email to asktsoe@verisage.com. Of course, the website is The Soul of Enterprise, where you can see show notes as well as previews to upcoming shows. At this first break, we'd like to remind you to rate this podcast. You can do this by going to ratethispodcast.com/TSOE. But right now, a word from our sponsors.
Follow Voice America at facebook.com/Voice America for juicy updates from your favorite radio shows and podcasts.
Ron, we talk a lot about business opportunities. Well, now a great one has become our sponsor, bookskeepingfranchise.com, bookskeeping with an X.
That's right, Ed. If you are interested in becoming part of the $4.2 billion bookkeeping industry for a franchise fee of just under $20,000, visit www.bookskeepingfranchise.com.
Bookskeeping comes with full training, plus marketing and technical support, and even staffing. Visit the website or call 855-935-2669. Franchise opportunity not available in all states.
Have you ever read a book that changed your life? I sure have. Have you ever listened to an advertisement for a book so many times that you question the existence of God? Me too. Hello, I'm Greg Kite. I recorded the advertisement for Ron and Ed's book, The Soul of Enterprise Dialogues on Blah, 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 Whatever. And 4 years later, we're all tired of it, especially me. But thankfully, there's a solution. For just $10 a month, you never have to hear my voice again. For a commercial-free version of The Soul of Enterprise, go to patreon.com/TSOE and subscribe now.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned into The Soul of Enterprise with Ron Baker and Ed Kless. To find out more about our show, visit us on the web at thesoulofenterprise.com. You can also chat with us on Twitter using #AskTSOE. Now, back to The Soul of Enterprise.
Well, welcome back, everybody. We're here with Magat Wad, and she is the author of a wonderful book, The Heart of a Cheetah, How We Have Been Lied to About African Poverty and What That Means for Human Flourishing. It came out last year. Absolutely love the book, Magat. It was just tremendous. I loved your life story, and then you wove in some great economic concepts. One thing I wanted to ask you about, you posit in the book, and I think you prove it, three reasons that Africa remains poor. And I also loved how you point out that Africa is not one single nation. It's 54 independent states. Can we discuss the three reasons you believe Africa remains poor?
Yeah. So Africa, for me, remains poor primarily because of it's the most overregulated region in the world, basically. And also, you have but we all think it has to do with foreign aid, and this foreign aid is not helping either. And then you have the anti-bias, you know, the anti-business, the anti-capitalism bias of mainstream media, academia, and and Hollywood.
Yeah, and of course you've got the NGOs in there as well.
Well, that's what I mean by aid.
Yeah, yeah. And I wanted to ask you just about that. You, somebody at a TED conference said, name me one country that's developed or become wealthy through aid. And I think even Bono yelled out Ireland, which is kind of incorrect. But it seems to me that people don't understand, like you point out, that it's wealth that's the antidote to poverty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, yes. And that Bono heckling Mwenda was actually one of the most surreal experiences I've ever had. It was so bizarre. It was so bizarre. It was a cringe moment. It was cringe-worthy moment. In any case, you know, look, Ron, it's very easy. I mean, you know, I think people just don't. We don't. Some things are so obvious, but we don't see them.
Yes.
Because, okay, So when you even ask people, what do you think is a solution to poverty? I kid you not. You will hear everything under the sun, but you won't hear the right response. You will hear, oh, more education. Oh, more access to this. Or less racism. You're going to hear all types of things. But you're not going to hear that the solution to poverty is prosperity. Once you've been told, you're like, oh, duh. Yeah, but no one thinks about it. I promise you, go out tomorrow and ask people. Ask them. Say, what's the solution to poverty? I promise you. I will take you out to dinner to treat you what you want if one person comes back and tells you it's prosperity, but hasn't heard us talk before. I promise you. But we're trying to change that. So the solution to poverty is prosperity. Who builds prosperity? That's one too. Most people will not get it. But who builds prosperity? Entrepreneurs. What do they need? Most people will tell you they need financing. They need blah, blah, blah. They need marketing training. They need blah, blah, blah. But most people will not tell you what entrepreneurs need the most because it's invisible to most people. Just like the air is invisible to us, but without it, we can't go anywhere. So poverty is solved by prosperity. Prosperity is built by entrepreneurs, and that's a key word, built by entrepreneurs. Yep. What do entrepreneurs need in order to build? They need an enabling business environment. Yet you told me that most African nations do not provide a good business environment to their entrepreneurs. Then you wonder why we're poor. That's why we're poor. So your foreign aid is not going to get us there. Foreign aid gets no one anywhere. Let's say even the foreign aid was well spent. Let's say it was well spent and it was not, you know, squandered like it is right now. Because right now it's been squandered. The money that foreign nations are sending to our nations because we're poor to help us meet our budget, national budget needs, some portion of that goes straight into the pockets of our leaders, like I told you earlier, for taking their girlfriends again to France or to Paris or whatever. And the rest of the money goes straight back into the pockets of the donor countries through all of these different agencies that they have, aid agencies, USAID, whatever, and the consultants that are all, you know, swarming around them. To better understand all of that, go watch PovertyInc.org. It's a beautiful documentary that gives you a great understanding of all of that. But bottom line is, out of a system that's designed to supposedly help the little people get crumbs and the people at the top get the most. And the worst in here is if this stops, if the people really become prosperous, this whole thing crumbles because no more need of sending foreign aid. So this is an issue you have. And what I was saying is even if foreign aid was spent the right way, let's say, you know, all the money you send us is sent our way. As a country, we can only spend it on things like roads, hospitals, things like that. So even if you took some of that money and you said, oh, I'm going to give it and, as investment for entrepreneurs, it's still a better idea, but still, if the laws remain the same, if the business environment remain as rotten as ever, the math still doesn't add up. I am still not able to produce all the jobs that I can produce because I am stifled. My ability to enterprise is stifled. So that environment, until and unless it is right, I don't care how much you pour into me, you might as well consider me to be a leaking bowl. These are, you know, George's terms. So this is why foreign aid doesn't work. And then you have NGOs. So NGOs, the difference between some NGOs, when we say NGOs maybe and foreign aid, is that we're just talking, NGOs just means nonprofit, you know, government organization. So it's like a standalone, little aid initiatives. But again, unless they're addressing this issue, and this one is a systemic issue because you're dealing with a system that's wrong. The business environment is a system. It's wrong. And all of these NGOs, for the most part, they're trained. They know how to give a man a fish. And for the better of them, they know how to train a man how to fish, teach a man how to fish. But until and unless that man has access to the ocean or to the river, It's still game over. It is still not happening. And so this is why all of that stuff just doesn't get us anywhere. And then you say more education. Okay, great. Didn't you know that half of the graduates that are coming out of African universities don't have a job? And actually, the more educated you are and the less and the more you are at risk of not being able to be employable, right? Because at the end of the day, you can be as educated as you want, but if there's no job that you need, which is a vessel that you need, doesn't exist, I'm sorry, but your education, you go sit on that couch over there with it. It's not going to do any good for you. So you see my point, and we just have it wrong. We have it wrong. And no one is thinking about this. No one is. And not only we're not enough people are thinking about it, but on top of that, we are still surrounded by an anti-business attitude, an anti-capitalism attitude from media, academia, and Hollywood. So that's, we still have these issues on our back, and no one is willing to rethink this thing. Not the Africans. Africans say, oh, something is wrong, but then them, for the most part, we fall back on, well, something is wrong, but you know, it's all the West's fault. And the Westerners, something is wrong, but you know, it's all because, I guess even them, they say it's all because of the West's fault. And so, and no one is thinking about what we should be thinking.
Yeah, I mean, you point this out in so many different ways. The fact that 90% of the jobs are in the informal sector, only 5% of the companies operate legally. You had to pay 5% when you things for your money. It's amazing. I think you proved the point beyond the shadow of a doubt.
But it makes sense. But it makes sense because, Ron, think about it. If you make it so hard, you know, people are not stupid. You, me, African, the rest of my fellow Africans back in Africa, no one is stupid. Humans are so good at knowing what incentives work for them or not. It's, I mean, economics and laws and regulation, this is why it's all about incentives. So if you're going to charge me 45% tariff or 70% tariff, because some of them are 70% tariff, if you're going to stand on my eyelashes, literally, meaning you're telling me what I get to do or not do, you're supervising me and telling me who I can hire, not hire, at what price, when, and also even have to, you, the government, have a say in when and who I can fire or not. If you put it all together, when you have a tax code that's so complicated that it's worth truckloads of rules and regulations, so much that you're going to make an honest mistake when you're filing for your taxes, not only you're going to have to hire experts, which means costing more money, but even those experts tell you they're going to make mistakes, which means you're always running the risk of being harassed or worse yet, being put in jail by your government by no fault of yours, just because the more rules and regulations and the more mistakes people are prone to make. It's just normal. So the tax code is very complicated. The labor laws are worth truckloads also of rules and regulations. You are literally married to your employees, for good or for bad. When you see all of this, and it's like that about everything. When you have to go to a government office 3 times a month just to pay your payroll related taxes. Are you kidding me? 3 times a month. And you have to go in person because these people don't answer emails. Oh, and now they say, oh, but now we made it better. Now you only have to do it 4 times a year. Still, are you kidding me? The stuff that we could do online, you know, in no time done, you're asking me to still waste, you know, a day worth of my life every single month to do this crap, you know? So anyway, when people look at this, they're like, oh, this is what it means to be a legal business. I'm not going to be legal. I'm staying in the informal sector. That's what the informal sector is. It is just people responding to the wrong, nasty incentives that this rotten business environment needs. This tells you everything you need. When you have so many people in the informal sector, it tells you any economist knows, connects the dots. It's your sign that you have a rotten, one of the worst business environment there. Because if it's easy, if it's sane, for most people, it's faster for them to be in the formal sector and move along through things. But if not, people are saying, hey, I'm not gonna join the legal side of a business, the legal side of doing business, because I'm opening myself to all types of harassment. And so people stay in the blacks in the underground. That's what the informal sector is. You're not formal.
Right. Reminds me of who is it, Hernandez de Soto's work.
Yeah.
Well, my God, this is fantastic. It's flying by. And folks, we'd like to remind you, if you want to contact me or Ed, send us an email to asktsoe@verisage.com. Do check out our Patreon channel where you can subscribe and get access to our bonus content. You can do that at patreon.com/TSOE. That channel is now sponsored by 90 Minds. Check them out. More minds are better than one at 90minds.com. And now a word from our sponsors.
Enjoying our shows and can't get enough of us? Follow us on Instagram at Voice America Talk Radio and see what we're cooking up for you.
Have you ever listened to an online radio show that changed your life? I'm required to say that I have. Have you ever stopped listening to an online radio show because the commercials were mind-numbingly repetitive? Of course you haven't, because you're here right now. Look, you don't have to listen to me anymore. There's a commercial-free version of this show, and it only costs $10 a month. And for $15 a month, you get no commercials plus bonus content. Go to patreon.com/TSOE, subscribe now, and be free. You're worth it.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned into The Soul of Enterprise with Ron Baker and Ed Klass. To find out more about our show, visit us on the web at thesoulofenterprise.com. You can also chat with us on Twitter using #AskTSOE. Now, back to The Soul of Enterprise.
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome back to The Soul of Enterprise. Our guest today is Magad Wad. Her book is Heart of a Cheetah, How We Have Been Lied to About African Poverty and What It Means for Human Flourishing. Magad, I wanted to talk about your struggle, and I can't recommend this book enough, especially your personal story, which we don't have time to go into, but I strongly recommend that people read it for that. It's just wonderful and heartfelt and just a beautiful story. But I want to talk about a little bit of the business side. Talk a little bit about your personal struggles to open up a business in Senegal.
So, and it's not just opening it up, it's running it. It's, so what is funny is, so, what's funny is people, so when I first started doing on this journey of entrepreneurship in Africa, it was in 2004. And back then, so we're talking about 20 years, you know, prior. And back then, you could already compare, doing business in Senegal and doing business in the US. And that's what I've always done. And I can see how it's progressed over the years to today. But not much has changed, honestly. So to legally register a business back then, it's a process that could easily take 2 years. In the US, it was something that, you know, was taking less than half a day. Today in my country, they claim that it takes 24 hours, but the devil is in the details, isn't it? Because what it is in order to legally register your business, you have to have different pieces of documentation that then when you have them all together, you take them to the one-stop shop counter. There, supposedly, it will take 24 hours. But the devil is in the details. Some of these documents you need, like a birth certificate. Huh? When is the last time you needed a certificate here? Okay? And so you're trying to go to this office where, because we have not done anything, you know, nothing has been digitized to this day, what you do is you go there. Let's say you were born in the middle of a village of nowhere, right? Like maybe my parents were, or some of my friends still to this day are. And guess what? You come and they're like, well, sorry, the mice ate the records. I mean, literally. Because the records are in these boxes in the middle of I don't know where, and then literally the mice ate the boxes. So now you have to have a complex situation where, you know, you have to go to a judge to kind of try to establish, you know, to reestablish this birth certificate thing in some things. You can imagine how long that might take, that process takes, okay? And then you have to then go to your notary. And a notary in countries like mine that practice civil law rather than common law, because, you know, when the French left, they forced their previous colonies to keep the civil law, which goes back to Napoleon times. Anyway, the notaries are pretty powerful, and you cannot do anything without notaries. And what people have to understand, I'm not talking about the notaries of the U.S. where you used to even, they can even do things for you for free, or you pay $5 or $20 and you're done, $10 here. No, these are almost like lawyer type people, okay? With the cost of lawyer type people. So they have these offices, you know, like a lawyer's office. You go in there and then they're going to fill out all the paperwork for you. So you literally have to go through them. You cannot do this by yourself, because the stamp they have is a stamp that you have to have by, you know, state mandate. And so that process is going to cost you money. And then, it has to be, you have to wait for it to be, in the Gazette, you know, established in the Gazette, wait for some time. And then, so when you start to add all of these things together, some of the stuff that they ask you for can take up to 6 months to get, some of them 8 months, who knows? But you see, we're far away from about 24 months that's advertised, aren't we? That's just registering the business. And then once you're in business, okay, now I need to hire an employee. Now I want to hire you, Ed. Okay, great. If I'm in the U.S., what does that mean? It means that you and I, we meet and we talk about something. We said, well, I'm going to hire you to be a lab technician in my lab to make these skincare products. Mind you, you're worthless, you know, a PhD in German. You know, that's why you were sitting home looking for a job, because who needs a PhD in German? I digress. But still, I find that, you know, with the right training, you have a right attitude, anything, I can train you. You can be a good lab technician. Okay, good. So you're going to come, and this is, you and I agree on the compensation, and we sign something. You put it in your drawers. I put it in my drawers. We're good to go. Done. It's done. It's done as quickly as we're able to discuss it, agree on it, sign, and we're in business, and we get going. Oh, but no, the same guy, Ron, in Senegal, if we're in Senegal, then it means we have to sign that paperwork in 3 copies, and then I physically have to take my ass over to the government office called Inspection du Travail, Labor Inspection Office. And because we made a deliberate, you know, and conscious decision to be in the countryside so that we can help people stay home and not migrate to the cities as they usually do, you know, it means we create jobs, and we also have a school for the children of our workers. It means we're far away from the government centers. In this case, the sub-region of, so Senegal has 13 regions, and each region has like an area where you have a bigger, where you have sub offices of the big government offices. But some of them you have to go to the capital city to get them to. But the inspection labor, every region is going to have one. So you go to the inspection labor. In this case, they're like an hour and a half away from us. You might say, why are you going there physically? Well, because again, they don't answer emails. They don't answer emails. You email them something, good luck with that. Where you would have waited for a year, you're probably going to wait forever, because they're just not going to open the emails. Now, if the girlfriend is sending an email, trust me, that's what they're using the emails for. You know, whatever. So, but I digress. So here you are, you drive in the morning, try to get there first thing in the morning. You're bringing this, all of this paperwork for different people. So I'm taking, you know, Ron's paperwork with me. And then you get there, just to realize, and normally all of this was prepared by your CPA, because remember, the labor laws are so complicated, you have to hire experts. So I go in with everything that my expert, you know, in this case, it's my CPA who helps me with these things. I don't have an in-house HR, but he does that part for me. So he prepared everything. He said, let go. And then you arrive there just to be told about one regulation or rule that even your expert did not know about. Because things are so cumbersome, it's just like, I'm telling you. So then we're calling consulting with the CPA. Hey, we're here. He's saying we need, in this case, we're told that we needed, Ron's health certificate to basically judge if he's capable, physically apt to do the job, even if it's a desk job or something like that. Doesn't matter. And then my guy is saying, huh? I never heard that before. And then the inspector is like, well, yeah, well, I'm sure in Dakar, it's in the laws. In Dakar, they never ask for it, the capital city, because, you know, they're so busy, the infection office are so busy, they don't have time to go into this. But here we have all the time in the world and we will make you feel it. Yes, it is in the law. And then they will pull up this thing. You see this law and you see that it's a law that's dated from colonial times. Colonial times! And so, wow. Anyway, but this inspector who has never worked in a business before, even if his life depended on it, he doesn't know what the private sector looks like, doesn't even know the little place of nowhere where you're running your business from, understands nothing about your industry, knows nothing about nothing. This person, though, gets to decide if Ron and I can voluntarily engage in working with each other.
Wow.
Even when that, and at what cost, and also at what compensation, they have to validate it. And even if we pass all of that, and then this means many back and forth, because they could disagree with this on the qualification you put him in, because, you know, they're pro employees against employers, just like pro tenants against landlords. So you see how it is. So they're trying to everything to stick it to you, the employer. So trying to put the employee into a higher category that they don't belong to just because, oh, that way you have to pay more. But who are you harming when you're doing this? I'm just going to ask this guy to stay home because I don't care what you want. If my budget doesn't support it and the market doesn't support it, I'm not going to engage in this. So this guy's going to take his ass back home with his worthless PhD in Germany in the first place. Okay? That's all you were able to, how you were able to help him. So you see how much your education, that people talk about sometimes more education? No, it's not about more education. Because that guy is educated, but I can't hire him because of that education, actually. So in any case, you continue like that. And then the minute I hire you, I better start building a case on you. Because that's the only way I'll be able to fire you. Even if you're stealing from me. I remember, you're married to employees for good or for bad. And then it's like that about everything. The tax code is so complicated. Even, I'm not even talking about how high the taxes are, but just how cumbersome it is to even find out how to pay them. Like I told you, at first we were going to three different government offices once a month just to pay payroll related taxes. Imagine the waste of time. And you go to these places, the government official is out running his errands, or maybe he was with his mistress, who knows, and then all of a sudden shows up at noon instead of being there at 8. No, seriously, it's just crazy. And so you see, it's like that about everything. And then, you know, for me to export my product back in the U.S., the U.S. is not the one that bothers me, but it's back there. Again, you have to go get to this guy who have to get a special stamp from Certificate of Origins, all of type of things, and they just make everything super complicated, and every single you know, point of friction with the government, meaning you need the government for something to approve of this or that, it means the point of friction, and they know it. And so what they'll do, even if it's just even to go retrieve your passport or your driver license, something that your state owes you because they're the ones who put that in place, then you apply, you pay the fees, but guess what? If you don't pay this man or this woman an extra little something, your file, your application remains at the bottom of the pile. And it means you may not be able even to travel to meet with this customer that you can get this big deal from. You see, so when everything is like that, please, guys, Ron and Ed, tell me, which one of you is really going to be as crazy as saying, oh, gee, we think it's so great to go do business in a country like this? Really? Well, most people are like, no, this is crazy, including Africans themselves. The ones who could be setting up businesses, they decide not to set up a business. Many of them are actually building just a building. Because a building, you don't have to, you know, have to have employees or anything like that. It's a sort of investment where you don't have to deal with the state as much as I have to deal with them with. And the only reason why tech entrepreneurship is the type of entrepreneurship that thrives more in Africa, more than people like me, brick and mortar related, is because tech entrepreneurs can escape a lot of these stupid brick and mortar laws, right?
Yeah.
No, but brick and mortar. We can't eat tech. We can't shower tech. We can't, you know, house with tech.
You know? Crazy. Well, my God, the last segment is going to be run. I'm just exhausted listening to you. I'm just completely exhausted. And I was going to say, Ron, and we complain about the Jones Act here in the United States. We got nothing on the Jones Act's got nothing on this. All right. Want to remind our listeners they can get a hold of Ron or me by sending an email to asktsoe@verisage.com. The website is The Soul of Enterprise. Show notes, previews to upcoming shows. But right now, a word from our sponsors and my employer, Sage.
Voice America is on LinkedIn. Connect with us today.
Sage provides accountants with compliance, reporting, and analytic solutions to do more for their clients. These solutions include education programs such as the Sage Accountants Network Client Advisory Service Program. This program delivers the tools to create, package, price, market, and deliver additional services to clients, increasing your profitability and delivering more value to your clients. Let Sage help you grow your business by visiting sageaccountantsnetwork.com.
Have you ever been so annoyed by a commercial for a $5 ebook that you were willing to pay $10 to never hear it again? I sure have. Hello, I'm Greg Kite. Over the last several years, you've come to hate me, and I hate me too. By now, you know that for $5, you can get a copy of Ron and Ed's book. What you might not know is, for twice that much every month for forever, you can stop hearing me plug Ron and Ed's book, which totally makes sense, like the Diamond Water Paradox. Go to patreon.com/TSOE and subscribe today. Please, for the love of God, make it stop!
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
You are tuned into The Soul of Enterprise with Ron Baker and Ed Kless. To find out more about our show, visit us on the web at thesoulofenterprise.com. You can also chat with us on Twitter using #AskTSOE. Now, back to The Soul of Enterprise.
Well, welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Magat Wad about her book, The Heart of a Cheetah. And Magat, I wanted to ask you, what about those who fret about Africa's poor because it's overpopulated?
I think, is it a good idea to have more kids than you can afford? Probably not. I give you that. But Africa is poor because it's overpopulated. It's one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard. And also, it's not understanding the history of the world. All around the world, people have had way more kids than their, economic circumstances afforded them. I think you don't need to look back much more, whether it's in the U.S. or in Europe or, you know, it just has been like that for almost everywhere in the world. It is notorious that poor people have more kids, and it's due to multiple different reasons, but that is nothing new, and it is nothing specific to Africans. And most importantly, it does not mean that they will never, because of that, they won't make it to prosperity. Because like I told you, there are almost all other nations and societies were traditionally having way more kids than their their prosperity level, you know, commended for. And yet they went from that stage of being primarily poor, you know, for the most part, to building prosperity. So the amount of kids is not the reason why a nation remains poor. Again, you're poor because you're not prosperous. You're not prosperous, poverty because poverty is solved by prosperity. Prosperity is solved by entrepreneurs. If you can't get your entrepreneurs to work, then the poverty remains. In this case, 20 million kids or not, if you don't have entrepreneurs able to enterprise and build prosperity, then we have a status quo. It's just, I hope people can understand that. Because if you have only husband, wife, like people married, let's say they even have one kid or two kids, they're still poor. Yeah, you might say that kid might still have a little bit of a bigger loaf of bread than he or she would have had if they had 12 siblings. but you're still limited. I mean, that bread is still not enough. It's just at some point you have to think about growing the pie. If the pie doesn't grow, I don't care if you're three people in the household or 12, you may be a little bit slightly better off. But if that pie does not grow, there's going to be a problem. So for me, it's not about how many kids. It's about, can we grow a pie that's big enough to feed everybody? And so I think we need to focus more on that than on the latter. It is too easy for people who have already gone through that journey to have forgotten that's part of their journey. Okay? So two generations back, tell me what was the average of kids in American families. Europe, same thing, all of that. It's only when nations actually become more prosperous, then you have less kids. So I think people really need to learn the history, economics, and also why that would happen. Because when women have also a job, now the cost benefit, you know, analysis becomes very different. I mean, they're going to be the first ones to say, I prefer to be at work than, you know, being home and producing all of these kids. Different things start to happen. So I just think that for me, it's another one. It's just like, we have so many of these distractions about why we're poor. It's not even a joke. So this is why I wrote this book, because I'm just like, until and unless people get the right diagnosis as to why we are where we are, which by the way, is not unique to us. Every single nation that has gotten somewhere had eventually to get serious about the free markets, about free market capitalism, period. And then from there, a lot of things we take for granted today start to happen. So if we need to stop behaving with Africans as we're some weird species of people.
Right. What about energy poverty, Magat? You know, wind and solar, people are bringing it over there. But like Alex Epstein points out in his book, Fossil Future, you need energy to develop and become prosperous as well.
Absolutely. The simple truth is energy is only viable if it's affordable, reliable, and abundant.
Right.
You remove any one of those three, you're starting to have not a really, like, you can't even begin to call it an energy source that the rest of us should consider viable. Okay? So when it comes to that, I am sorry. I would love renewables to be the way. I would love that. But the truth is, it's not. It's not. It's not. If it was, even crazy Green Party of Germany would not be the ones who would have recently gone back and say, oh, by the way, okay, we have to put back in exercise some coal plants. Coal. From the
even burning wood.
Germany.
Even burning wood. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So when reality hit them in the butt, they should then, I mean, why is that reality true for them? But for us, so bottom line is we need, until further notice, until I have proof that these renewables are affordable, reliable, and abundant, until then, I am not taking the mask off. Thank you very much. Fossil fuels all the way. And we need to work also on nuclear. As a matter of fact, we're going to be needing more and more energy than ever. I am all for clean energy. And for that, we know that nuclear is really amazing. And we're going to need more energy than ever because also AI, people don't talk about this. This AI, my God, is energy hungry. Okay, so when you add it on top of everything else we need energy for, you're starting to imagine the amount of energy we're going to need. So no one in their right mind can sit there and tell me that renewables are the way for Africa. If you believe that, how about you come down? But when you come, you cannot go back. You come, I put in the middle of nowhere Africa, and I come back in a year, and I check on you to see how well you're doing if you're not dead. And then, maybe we can talk about it.
I think the left is sacrificing the poor on the altar of environmentalism.
Except we won't let them. You see, good. I don't care how many misguided Africans that they find somewhere to speak their language. We are not going to let them. See, I think this is something that the left just doesn't get. Times have changed. People like George Ayite have worked on the cheetah generation, of which I am part of.
Yep.
We are a bunch of us Africans who have gone to the same schools as these people have gone to. We know the name of the game. We understand the code. We understand the language and we speak it better than them. and know what's going on, and they're going to have us to reckon with. That's just, I think, the one element they did not take into account. And darn it, we will get our way. And so it would be so good for them to understand, if you cannot support me in this journey, on my journey to 2.5 billion prosperous Africans by 2050, if you can't support me in that journey, please get out of the way. For your own sake, get out of my way.
Yep. Get on the train or get under it. Yeah. God, thank you so much for coming back. This has been an absolute honor. We'll do everything we can to get your message out there and recommend your book to everybody we know. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
Yep. And just on that, Ron, before we sign out, I am a customer of Skin Is Skin. Go to skiniskin.com and also cheetahmade.com to look up any of the new products that are coming out of African products made by in Africa by Africans. So really appreciate that. Thanks, Magad. This has been The Soul of Enterprise, Business in the Knowledge Economy, sponsored by Sage, transforming the way people think and work, enabling their organizations to thrive. Join us next Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, that's noon Pacific. In the meantime, please feel free to visit us on the web at www.thesoulofenterprise.com.